Hi, everybody. We welcome you to our Saturday morning Bible study. Today is April 6th, 2019. We are recording from the Plainfield Christian Science Church Independent, Plainfield, New Jersey, United States of America. And we're so glad you could join us this Saturday morning. And our moderator today is Thomas from New York.
Hello, so and welcome. So I'll start out with quotes from Unity of Good. So I've got three here, so hopefully that's okay. I usually have one quote, but I thought there was so much relevance in Unity of Good. So, all that is, God created. If sin has any pretense of existence, God is responsible therefore. But there's no reality in sin, for God can no more behold it or acknowledge it than the sun can coexist with darkness. So that's Unity of Good, page 64. The next one. The scriptures declare that God is too pure to behold iniquity. Habakkuk 1, verse 13. But they also declare that God pitieth them who fear him, that there is no place where his voice is not heard, that he is a very present help in trouble. That's Unity of Good, page 2. Now, last one is, Jesus taught us to walk over, not into, or with, the currents of matter or mortal minds. That's Unity of Good, page 11.
Okay.
Those are extremely important quotes. Thank you, Thomas. Because I'm always getting those questions. Well, if God doesn't know evil, then how does he know me? And Mrs. Eddy explains it here. There's nothing she doesn't explain, and she also, in Unity of Good, she goes on to say these are some of the higher questions, and it's as if you want to know the answers to quantum physics before you've learned the multiplication table. You've got to take it a step at a time, and it will open up to you how this can be. So, I mean, I like to think of God as my best than ever friend, as Lillian said in her testimony on Wednesday. But at the same time, he is, you know, above it all. I think I've explained it to you. If you were walking toward the sun, and say sun is an example of God, and yes, you were in darkness, you were in pain, you were physically ill, but as you walked toward the sun, the light just shines and shines, and so all that darkness that you were carrying within you, it disappears, right? Goes. Leaves. Now, does the sun know that you were having all those troubles? Probably not. but it just was, and so we say, sun, so that love is just pouring out on you. All of that is just pouring out on you. And as you approach it and get to know it more and get closer to it, then those troubles that seem so real and so awful, they just go. They can't stand in the presence of truth, life, and love, as Mrs. Eddy has told us. That presence annihilates them. So you see, the same thing, that this love pouring forth on you, just unconditional, it doesn't matter if you're the worst sinner in the world, you never did anything right in your life, it just pours on you and heals. So it's just a wonderment of how it all works.
It's just we have to, like if it's the sun, we have to go in it to feel it, so there's something required on our side.
Well, there is. You have to walk toward it, and seek to understand it. Seek ye first the kingdom of God and his righteousness. So you have to go toward it and seek to understand it, as all of you are doing. And as you do that, and as you understand more and more, that sun just brightens and brightens and brightens until the perfect day. And all the troubles that you were carrying that seemed so real, so awful, they disappear in the brightness of his glory. Then you find out they never were true in the first place.
And just as the darkness has no power to prevent the sun from shining, problems that you think you have no power to prevent the love of God from caring for you.
Thank you.
So I just wanted to mention that The Unity of Good was first published in March of 1888. It was copyrighted in 1887. Originally, I think Mike can tell us about this. I think he knows some background on it. But it's originally titled Unity of Good and Unreality of Evil, and it was renamed Unity of Good in 1891. Now, I just wanted to ask if seeing the three quotes from Unity of Good, if anybody saw that and got inspired to read Unity of Good or any portion of it? Inspire anybody to read some of it?
Yes, and thank you. Especially the last quote, when I wanted to find more about why she was talking about Jesus telling us to walk, taught us to walk over, not in the currents.
Well, I believe she calls it her masterpiece.
Yes.
And it's one that we certainly all need to be very familiar with if you are not. It is somewhat deep, but it's also somewhat very plain at the same time. I often refer people to it when they're asking me these questions. Where did evil come from and all of that kind of thing. You have to be willing to accept the answers, though. Some people just argue and argue and argue, and that's the human mind. And someone recently like that, and then there's a point where there's, okay, well, just pray for receptivity, and it will come. And you don't try, as I said, to understand quantum physics before you have proved the earlier steps of the science.
It's also one of the tricks of the devil to keep you arguing things back and forth. Instructions here is clear, but also consistent with Mrs. Eddy's taught us in Science and Health to rise in the strength of spirit. Instead of staying down there and arguing with it and trying to battle with it on its terms, rise above it. The battle is not yours, it's the Lord's.
Doesn't she also say not to try to emerge all at once?
Yeah, gently. Yes. Practice what you know, and more will be revealed. You can't sit in your chair and try to figure this all out, and then get frustrated at yourself or at Christian Science. You just can't. That's not what this is about. It's living it. That's why, as I've said to you, Mrs. Evans said, the only real thing she learned from her teacher, who was Jean Roe Price from Montclair, was that intellectualism is the bane of Christian Science. Because when you're arguing like this, you are in the wrong mind, and you are trying to be an intellectual. Intellectuals are like the Pharisees; they're just questioning and all. Oh, what do you know? And they'll never get it. So. Forget about it.
Step by step.
Step by step.
Although success and fun.
Yes.
Refuge and strength.
Yes. That's a very present help in trouble. Mm-hmm. step by step.
That kind of questioning will never be resolved, never be answered. And if you get into this, it just gets more and more aggressive, so you don't want to go down this path.
That's right, you don't.
Yeah. You can deny yourself your salvation, too, doing all that. Somebody asked me, well, I was trying to give them a science and help. He said, what studies have been done to prove this? I said, well, I think the Bible is the authority on that. Anyway, it's just intellectualism.
Well, and Prudage proves it. And Mrs. says over and over that you prove it by your works. That's why you can't sit in a chair and try to intellectualize it. You have to get out and live it. And then you'll say, oh, now I get it. Now I understand.
But you can't ever win.
No. Go ahead, Linda.
I was just, thank you. That's just so beautiful. I think it brings out that last quote so perfectly. She's talking about walking over, not into or with, and that's practicing it. That's that active, step-by-step living and Jesus taught us, and she gave us the science of it. It just brings out that sentence more than ever, so thank you.
Yeah, and I mean, walking into it or with it is getting in arguments and getting down into the whole human scene, and rather than, she says, don't beat out against the myth, simply rise above it, or what Bruce was saying, rise above it.
Well, also, is there any connection, is there any overlap between divine mind and the so-called mortal mind?
Total opposite.
There's no common ground. You can't be in both at the same time. It's like Dives and Lazarus, right? There was a great gulf between them. Well, there's no connection. So if you're in or with the currents of mortal mind, you're sunk. You're in the wrong place. You have forsaken divine mind, and you've basically, in belief, cut yourself off from God's help. When you're in divine mind, mortal mind, it isn't there.
There's a quote in Peter V. Ross's book, Lectures on Christian Science, that kind of answers this question of evil. I mean, it makes you think about it. Says, searching for the origin of evil is to adopt a happy comparison from a popular author, like hunting in a dark cellar at midnight for a black cat that isn't there.
That's great. I kind of remember that one. That's very good. We need to put that up on the somewhere. Anyway, it's very good.
It's like, what is the explanation a mistake? Right?
Yeah.
Is there a scientific basis for a mistake?
Yeah.
Well, that's what sin is. It's a mistake. And we learn in science that that's what disease is.
It's all error.
That's why when you delve into it materially, that's why how the Materia Medica keeps changing their theories, and what they say is it's basically just guesswork. So
definitely the Prudage.
Pardon me? Pardon me?
But definitely the Prudage is the study, because the raising of Lazarus or many of Mrs. Eddy's or anybody's fruitage is unexplainable, except that God has power over everything. even the dry bones that were raised into an army, or however that story went. There's never going to be a human explanation for it.
Thank you.
Okay. I thought maybe we'd get into the questions for today's Bible study. So our topic today is walkover. And our Bible readings, which are from the lesson this week, Deuteronomy chapter 4, verses 32 to 40, and Matthew 14, verses 22 to 32. So we're looking at two different things. One is the first one, Deuteronomy, the first discourse by Moses when they're in the land of Moab. And then Matthew 14 is the story about Jesus walking on the water. So, our first question, and I find this a fascinating word, so I hope you all did too. What does shama mean?
It means to hear. I love the reference you gave there to study from Strong's Concordance, and it's not just to hear casually, it's to listen attentively, to listen carefully, to listen closely, to listen obediently. There's so much more there that it's really a richness to delve into that.
It's the first word, I believe, of also of the prayer that the Jews are commanded to recite upon the rising and is taught to the children before they go to bed, is the Shema Yisrael, Adonai Eloheinu, Adonai Echad. So here, O Israel, the God is our Lord, it's one God. So it's commanded to them to recite it several times a day as a reminder to listen and to know that God is one.
That's beautiful. Thank you.
Beautiful. Thank you.
What a wonderful thing to do.
I think you hit on the theme for today. I think we can wrap up and go home now.
Really beautiful.
It is. I loved you saying it in Hebrew too. That was very beautiful.
Yeah, I learned that. And as a matter of fact, this studying for this Bible lesson just gave me an idea. My daughter has been so against me teaching my grandkids anything about God, but I figure, you know, that she wouldn't object to the Hebrew prayers. So I'm going to teach that to them, too, so they can say it at least. And she won't have anything to say because, you know, they're Jewish, so they won't. She had nothing to say against that, so thank you. Thank you. This is great. Thank you very much, Thomas.
Beautiful. Good thing to teach anyone.
You're welcome, and thank you.
Not today. Yes, thank you. And you said it's for the children. Is it it's specifically for them, or is it for everyone?
I think everybody is commanded to. I believe the Orthodox Jews don't require of the women, but the conservatives they do. I think it's recited several times a day, just as a reminder of for the Hebrew people to know that God is one and to obey God. And for the children, so at night before retiring, to also recite it as a reminder.
Can you say it anybody? In the Hebrew and in English? Can you say it again?
The Hebrew is Shema Yisrael Adonai Eloheinu Adonai Echad.
And the English?
Oh, it's the same one that you have on the, it's here, O Israel.
Okay.
The Lord our God, it's one.
It's one God.
Yeah. It's the same that is in the watching, you know, which I think is also very, hear, O Israel, the Lord our God is one God. So it's like that affirmation, and I think it's really very, very good to remind ourselves throughout the day here that the Lord, our God, is one God.
Yeah, that's beautiful. And then to listen, as Dale said, closely, obediently, intently.
Yes, yes.
It's beautiful. Now, is this the language then that Jesus spoke? Would that be what he would have said? Or do we know
Aramaic?
I don't know.
Jesus is Aramaic, right?
Yeah.
This is Hebrew.
So it's different. Okay. Thank you very much.
This is a very good discussion because so many times we've read and heard, Hear, O Israel, just taking it more like a salutation, as a rather is the instruction to listen intently to our Father. Give it some serious attention instead of just saying, hey, you guys.
Well, it's quite a skill, isn't it? A developed skill to be able to listen carefully to what God is telling you.
And obeying.
And obeying it, yeah.
Well, I'm sure everybody knows this, but just you know, a lot of people call in, so just go through this. The Strong's Concord was written by James Strong. It took 35 years to write this concordance, and he had a team of 100 people helping him on this. And they took every word in the King James Version and put that in the concordance and numbered them.
Wow. Wonderful. I don't have that concordance. I'm going to have to get it.
And when did he do this?
Oh, let's see. When was it published? I think 1890.
So he started in 1865 or 55?
I guess so. He was born in 1822, passed away in 1894.
Published in 1890 after 35 years of work.
Right.
Well, that overlaps pretty nicely with Mrs. Eddy's discovery of Christian Science, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Somewhere we have a list of her, I think it's in a Big Dale Young book, a list of books that were in her library and what concordances she used. Thank you, Tom. That's interesting.
The other note is that Mrs. Eddy's one brother was very well learned, and he taught her Hebrew and Greek. And that's what the Old Testament was mainly Hebrew, and the New Testament is Greek.
Wow, that's interesting.
And what other languages in the Bible, too? Sorry, this is a trick question, but anyway. What other language do they find in the Bible?
Well, it's part of it Latin.
Aramaic. So in the Old Testament, parts of Daniel and parts of Ezra are in Aramaic. I think we went over this a while back when we had Daniel as part of our Bible study. So a little bit of Aramaic, and then mostly Hebrew for the Old Testament and Greek for the New Testament.
Okay.
So, question number two. Okay. So now we're getting to Moses' discourse. And this thing from Deuteronomy 4, verse 32, I just wanted to write this a little more straightforward, so I use the NIV version, but has anything so great as this ever happened? So to put in context, if you read it, you kind of know what I mean by this, but has anything so great as this ever happened? I think it's an awesome question.
And Darwin would have poo-pooed it, wouldn't he?
I'm sure.
Does someone want to read that? 32 to 40.
For ask now of the days that are past, which were before thee, since the day that God created man upon the earth, and ask from the one side of heaven unto the other, whether there hath been any such thing as this great thing is, or hath been heard like it.
Keep going.
Did ever people hear the voice of God speaking out of the midst of the fire, as thou hast heard, and live? Or hath God essayed to go and take him a nation from the midst of another nation, by temptations, by signs, and by wonders, and by war, and by a mighty hand, and by a stretched out arm, and by great terrors, according to all that the Lord your God did for you in Egypt before your eyes? Unto thee it was showed, that thou mightest know that the Lord, he is God. There is none else beside him.
See, we're getting this proof of the first commandment, right?
Yes.
And yet, how many people are connected into this? Or are grateful for it? I mean, it is. It's a wonderful question. Has anything so great ever happened? And yet we just go around like, oh man, everything's a mess. Think about it and be grateful. And that's why in the Old Testament, there is so much of going over what happened with Moses and crossing the Red Sea. I mean, they go over it and over it, and they passed it down through talking about it, telling their children, and their children told their children's children. These are important things that are not being done today. You talk to your children or grandchildren about the wondrous things that God has done in your life or in the lives of others? What do you talk to them about? If you don't talk to them about this, why don't you? What's the matter with you? I get steamed up sometimes.
You know, and what's the matter with our schools? Our teachers aren't allowed to teach this in the schools. I mean, come on, really. What the heck are we doing to ourselves as a society?
We're keeping ourselves in bondage.
Yeah. Exactly.
We are. And then we wonder why we have this drug problem with our youth and high suicide rate and all this other stuff. Well, there's a reason. And it's not rocket science. We should be so grateful and happy about all the good that God has done. You know, we just want to shout it from the rooftop. And I know most of you are. Although we had too many silences on Wednesday. And there's never any excuse for that. Don't come to a service without anything to give. You come to give, and if you do that, you might not need to because everyone else will be giving. But just that time you don't think you have anything to say or you did it last week or whatever is when everyone else is thinking that too. So we come to our services to give, not to take. Taking is for the new people, and there are many new people that are listening in now. And thank goodness I had a pile of letters to read.
I think some of the good is taken for granted, really. We don't, you know, pay attention that all good is from God. Therefore, we have to be so grateful.
Thank you so much.
That's right. And also... Error, you know, the old devil never stops working. We are in the middle of Lent. There's a worldwide belief that we are born into sin and we will die because of it. Life is otherwise pretty miserable.
And we're mourning now.
And it has totally disregarded the fact that nothing so great as God's creation and love for man has ever happened.
Also, in working for the Wednesday meeting, you get the idea, I guess I don't have any news today, and you might be thinking, oh, it's just you only. That's the mistake. It's the argument of error. Who else is hearing the same message and maybe thinking, oh, it's just them only? It's not. It's an argument that needs to be taken up and faced.
Yeah, anytime I get that suggestion, I work all the more harder to try and get a testimony to give, because I know others are getting it too. So
it's also saying somebody else will do it, I don't have to.
Right. You're right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And we are to act as if what?
We're the only
Christian scientists on Earth. And when we
There is one problem with that, I'm sorry to say, because I've proved it. Because my majorly erroneous understanding of Christian science, which I was way too willing to share with my family and others, really didn't do any good because it kind of turned them off. So I think that's one factor that we have that Mrs. Eddy cautions about, and only speaking as far as we can demonstrate, and we definitely tried to speak beyond that.
So what does that have to do with giving testimonies at a testimony meeting?
I'm sorry. It's made me try to be much more cautious now, and it wasn't really, it wasn't for the testimony, it was the broadcasting from the rooftop. Mm-hmm. I'm just saying that I made some major mistakes. I'm not imposing this on anybody else.
Well, Mike, we've all made that mistake. Yeah. That's why we have that's why we have a testimony meeting to show how grateful we are for the fact that God does take care of us, and to talk about experiences that we've had that demonstrate to us that God is taking care of us, and not to preach.
Yeah,
that's the thing. Let's go back to unity of good, okay? So I think Mary Baker Eddy is being helpful in this, in rectifications, you know, so... she says, you know, first, God never made evil, you know, like he never made a mistake. Second, he knows it not. You didn't make a mistake, he doesn't know you made a mistake. And third, we therefore need not fear it.
Thank you. Thank you. That's right. And if you go around thinking you made a mistake and turn people off, well, watch what you're thinking. If you were doing the best you can, then know that it can only bless. And keep knowing that, because if you came out of love, it can only bless. Otherwise, yeah. you're declaring for the era and not for God.
Right, because even if it's not accepted at that time, you don't know. You might have, it's a seed planted. Sometimes it blooms later. So,
you never know, Mike. I've seen it over and over, and especially you'll have children saying, I don't want to hear it, I don't get it. And they're hearing it, and they're getting it. So don't negate ever the truth. And if it came out of love, and you were doing the best you know how, then you leave it to God. But yeah, we don't go around shoving it down people's throat or preaching. You can learn from your mistake. But Wednesday meetings, heaven forbid if anyone does that, they don't. We have humble testimonies of healing in our church. And if you really pray and break the animal magnetism that is telling you you have nothing to give, well, God gives it. God gives the increase. And this goes back to the listening and being obedient and listening intently. And if you do make a mistake, well, in our church, you usually find out about it. So,
As a matter of fact,
it's out in the open too.
It is. It's good. Right.
So another way to look at this is when we do good, we don't want to be expecting somehow in return some human good, like someone's thankful or appreciative and so forth. Okay, so we do good because that's the right thing to do.
Thank you, Tom.
He even says your good might be evil spoken of or something to that extent.
Yeah.
You remember? Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So you can count on it to be evil spoken of. Don't be impressed. And don't think of it as a mistake. Don't think of your action as a mistake. The good that you would offer as a mistake. And if you've legitimately made a real mistake, to the extent that you can call a mistake real, don't personalize it. This is part of learning to walk over. Don't hold the mistake to yourself.
Thank you.
Don't think of yourself as a mistaken person.
Mortal, yeah.
Mm-hmm. So this is exactly why I guess I bring it up, because I really appreciate that in this church, and there's an explanation and a solution, and hopefully it does others good and not only myself. So thank you very much.
Oh, that's fine,
and thank you for bringing it up.
Yeah. And if you have, you know, truly felt you've made a mistake, we've learned here what you do. You ask God's forgiveness. You can ask these people's forgiveness. You didn't mean to preach at them. You're so sorry. You won't do it again. And then you get on with your life.
And then you forgive yourself.
You forgive yourself, and you move on. You don't have it hovering over. That's how we deal with these things. And yes, we've all made mistakes. And this is called a repentance.
But when people personalize their mistake, think of it as real, that's where old theology comes from.
Yeah.
That's where this concept of original sin comes from.
And that's
all these false beliefs.
That's Lent. And that would make you feel guilty and make you feel condemned and make you feel, you know, you have nothing to say and you're not grateful. It would make you feel depressed and gloomy. All of this, that's Lent.
Everlasting punishment, which is not.
Which is not, yes.
So I think this is a perfect illustration of what this Bible study is all about. It's not teacher-led. So these aren't tests to see if you get the answer right. You know, these are discussions done in a loving atmosphere so that we all learn and we grow together.
Right.
Exactly.
Thank you, Tom. That's just what Carol said recently about these times.
I'd like to thank you for the comment about, even though we don't think the people that we talk to about God or Christian Science are, we may not think that they get it or they want to hear it or anything, but they are listening and they are getting something out of it, even though they're not going to tell us about it sometimes. That really made me feel like things were happening, even though I didn't get that they were happening or that good was going out and being received, and I appreciate that.
Thank you, Betty. It's absolutely right. Just as Lauren said, you're planting seeds, and maybe they're in the human mind and are going to protest it, but who knows when that seed will take root and they'll think later, oh, yeah, I remember what was said to me a long time ago or something. And because the truth is the truth.
And truth is the victor.
Always.
And truth is God, for goodness sake.
For goodness sake, you can't go wrong. Otherwise, error would just have us shut our mouths all the time. But we do it with wisdom. Love and wisdom go hand in hand, always.
That's why I love the Bible verse, all things work together for good to those who love God. Because we can't always know what the effect of anything is or what's happening, and sometimes things seem like, oh, this is a horrible thing, and later we can receive that good did come of it. When our motive is good, we can trust God.
That's so true. Thank you very much. Yeah. That is the law of the universe. It is. you know, I've seen with parents, you feel like you've made some terrible mistakes. Me included. But as long as your motive was love and you were trying to do the right thing, children are very resilient. It's only when you're motivated by something else, hatred, anger, whatever, and then that's the problem. That's the carnal mind. And that you need to really root out and repent of, yes.
That's been a big help to me, too, knowing that I did the best I knew how at the time.
Yes.
And yes. That just relieves a whole lot.
Yes. And that's how you can love your parents, too, because they were doing the best they knew how at the time, even though maybe you think it wasn't so great. Well, I'm sure most people do the best they know how.
Even if they really turn the kid off from science, sometimes 24 years later, the kid comes back around.
There you go.
I do have to say about Wednesday testimonies, it feels really good to give a testimony. And the last time I showed up not prepared was in October of 2013, and I felt awful that whole week until I moved the next week. And so I did not like that feeling.
And that's the thing. It gets you feel worse when you don't get up than the feeling initially, you know, scared or worried or not wanting to do it. Break that. That's just Era talking to you. I mean, that dear Diana, someone mentioned her recently to me. You know, she has to make a recording, and she does it faithfully. Not every week, but very often. And I'm very grateful for people who make that effort. So, thanks to all who do.
And she wakes up in the middle of the night to do a watch.
Oh, that's so sweet. And she does that because she says, you know, she feels the peace and the unity with all of you. And she wants to be part of it.
I often think that about my parents as well, that they did the best that they could or knew how at the time. And, you know, I think, well, I'm here now. I'm in science and I'm learning about God, and nothing that they ever did stopped that or kept me from moving forward and getting closer to God. So I'm grateful to God that he just held on to my hand and just kept pulling and pulling until I got out of that situation. So it's part of the forgiveness when you can forgive them. And they did the best that they could at the time, or that they knew how to do at the time. And it's really helped me to just feel calm and settled about that whole experience.
Thank you so much. Yeah. Forgive us our debts, as we forgive.
Our debt. We have been forgiven.
Yep.
And when you can think that way about others, your parents, whoever.
Well, thank you for that. So
you're healing yourself,
aren't you? And
so for question three, I think we've actually gone through this, but let's just walk through this anyway. So question three is, what are our obligations? And we've been kind of talking about this all along, but let's just make sure everybody understands this.
May I say something before we leave, too? That I've been. I read a lot about this because it meant so much. And also, God was saying, "Yeah, you didn't do it by yourself. I'm the one who took you into Israel and gave you the land." So, and remember that, and we have to remember it too. So it's very meaningful.
Thank you.
Thank you. Yes, that's really that question is all about the allness of God.
Right.
Just amazing.
Right. Our federal government didn't give it to us, that's for sure.
Okay, so what are our obligations? Or maybe it's obligation, singular, but what is it? We said it already. Although it's not a test. When I said it's not a test, it's not a test, okay?
Well, one obligation is to never forget what a good God we have and what God does for us. Never forget the evidence that's in the Bible, the fruitage in our lives of the proof of the allness of God.
That is a wonderful obligation. And another we talked about was this listening to God closely, obediently, intently, as Dale read.
Yes. One of the things I noticed was in the story that Tom gave us in Matthew, the first thing was Jesus sent the multitudes away, and then he went up to pray. I read a little bit about this, and there was another time in Mark where the apostles had gathered themselves together, and Jesus told him all things of what they had done. But then he went on to tell them that they needed to go and get a rest. He said to them, "Come, be yourselves apart into a desert and place and rest for a while." And they were many that were coming and going, and they had no leisure so much as to eat. And then after that, in Mark, they fed the multitude that followed them again. And again, he sent them into the ship after that to have quiet time. So that seems like that's Jesus is teaching us. And this is what I'm getting here at Plainfield, is making sure you have that time.
Yes, we're going to get into that more tomorrow at the roundtable. But it's in the lesson, "In returning and rest shall ye be saved. In quietness and in confidence shall be your strength." And you can't listen when you're all running around or talking to yourself. It requires the stillness. And many of us have never learned to do that, to be still and know that I am God. Or if you are still, you get bombarded with negative suggestions. You've got to go into your closet and get rid of all that. And it's a wonderful discipline to learn, and that goes back to Shama. To listen intently, closely, obediently. And now I'm going to have Gary read one of my favorite things in miscellaneous writing, starting on 176, where Mrs. Eddy tells us of our obligation.
And this is an address for Sunday services on July 4th. "But what of ourselves and our times and obligations? Are we duly aware of our own great opportunities and responsibilities? Are we prepared to meet and improve them? To act up to the acme of divine energy wherewith we are armored? Never was there a more solemn and imperious call than God makes to us all, right here, for fervent devotion and an absolute consecration to the greatest and holiest of all causes. The hour is come. The great battle of Armageddon is upon us. The powers of evil are leagued together in secret conspiracy against the Lord and against his Christ, as expressed and operative in Christian Science. Large numbers in desperate malice are engaged day and night in organizing action against us. Their feeling and purpose are deadly, and they have sworn enmity against the lives of our standard bearers. What will you do about it? Will you be equally in earnest for the truth? Will you doff your Lavender Kid zeal and become real and consecrated warriors? Will you give yourselves wholly and irrevocably to the great work of establishing the truth, the gospel, and the science which are necessary to the salvation of the world from error, sin, disease, and death? Answer at once and practically, and answer aright."
Those are some obligations, my friend. And Thomas brought it up, so I love that. Fires us up.
Well, I love that too. Fantastic.
Well, any more obligations that you can think of? Can't think of anything quite as important.
Well, let me bring up something that was in our reading, Deuteronomy 4, verse 39. And we've talked about this already today, but just to read this. The Lord, He is God in heaven above, and upon the earth beneath there is none else. Which is a similar thought to Deuteronomy 6, verse 4. Hear, O Israel, the Lord our God is one Lord. And that's what we've spoken about already today. So what I wanted to read was in Mark chapter 12, verse 29. And Jesus answered him, the first of all the commandments is, hear, O Israel, the Lord our God is one Lord. And then we see this every day in our watch list, right? Do we have that on our watch page, right? From Watches, Prayers, and Arguments by Mary Baker Eddy, page 49. So the first of all the commandments.
Yeah, that's our obedience to the first commandment. I and our obligations.
This makes me think of something I wrote from a Bible study on the Ten Commandments from March 9th. Matthew Henry said, hear, O Israel, hear and heed, hear and remember, hear that you may learn and keep and do, that we may have it ready to us upon all occasions to put into practice.
That is beautiful.
Oh, great.
we're going to start having to have a section where these things are written down for us. We do it for round.
Get ready, Chardell.
These are just wonderful. We don't want to lose them. We can't put everything on the carousel. And, you know, the definition Dale gave of listen from Strong was beautiful, too. That is absolutely perfect. Thank you.
One thing that's been helpful for me lately was Romans 12:19, where one can depend upon God for everything, and that reads, dearly beloved, avenge not yourselves, but rather give place unto wrath, for it is written, vengeance is mine, I will repay, saith the Lord. So I finally am trying to train myself that I don't have to be the one that tries to get a restitution, because it's not my job. And it's hopefully helping me to get rid of anger and frustration and that sort of thing.
Yeah, and there's a good guidance in that regard in Taking Offense, isn't there?
Yes.
This article, Taking Offense. That unless the offense is to God, it's not worth getting all excited about. But if the offense is to God, then you do have an obligation to do something and say something, don't you?
As directed.
As directed.
Yep. If more people did that, we would probably still have prayer in the schools. I mean, to me, that's an offense that is a huge offense to God. And it went on unprotested, I guess. I think some did. Maybe we still can, and maybe we can reverse that. How wonderful it would be. And Mrs. Eddy says how wonderful it would be if science and health was taught in the schools. Can you imagine? Goodness.
It will be someday.
It will be someday.
It will be, right.
And it has to have, though, the proper teachers to understand it, because it's been mistaught, as we know.
Deuteronomy 4. Okay. No, it's okay. It was right before the readings you took, gave us. There's a beautiful line. And God promises that in the latter days, if thou turn to the Lord thy God and shall be obedient to his voice, he'll be merciful and not forsake thee. So I think that promise is there for what you just said.
Thank you. Yes, it certainly is. And it's been the truth throughout generations.
So in our last question, since we're getting here towards the end, is and we have been talking about it, so if anybody hasn't had a chance to bring up something on, it's time to do it. So question 4, how do we walk over?
Two things came to my thought, one from Isaiah, where he says that, for the Lord God will help me, therefore shall I not be confounded. Therefore have I set my face like a flint, and I know that I shall not be ashamed. So the covenant is to make sure I look to God alone. I will obey his laws and serve him. And Mrs. Eddy in Science and Health says something, page 403, is the most Christian state is one of rectitude and spiritual understanding, and this is best adapted for healing the sick. And it's the same sense I get, that it's a commitment, a covenant, a readiness to be obedient only to God and to follow as Mrs. Eddy, Christ Jesus, are helping us to do so. And rectitude, we've looked at that before, is uprightness of mind, exact conformity to truth. And it says that perfect rectitude belongs only to the Supreme Being, whom we reflect, you know, so we can do the same. And it says that want of rectitude is not only sinful, but debasing.
Beautiful.
Perfect.
Yep, I'm not sure we can do much better. That's wonderful.
Perfect.
Well, Mrs. Eddy says, rise in the strength of spirit to resist all that is unlike good. God has made man capable of this, and nothing vitiates the power divinely bestowed upon man.
Yes, we have the capability from God.
When we are obedient to what God tells us, we have all the power of God to carry it out. Thank you, Florence. It's the obedience, what God is telling each one of us individually.
I love, you know, what you said is what came to me, too. Set your face like a flint. You have to have this sense that nothing's going to take you off course. You love God. We've mentioned many times through this Bible study with the one God with all our heart, mind, and soul. Because everything will try to take you off course. But if you set your face like a flint to Jerusalem and made that covenant, you will keep walking.
And walking over.
Over, yes, walking over the wave, not in the middle. And, you know, in the case of Peter, he was walking. He was walking when he focused on what?
On God, when he was focusing on Christ, Jesus.
Yes.
He gets distracted, probably, and then...
Yeah. Then he looked down at the waves and looked.
He was afraid and began to think.
He began to doubt.
Yes.
So,
you know what? I found the most fascinating thing written by Matthew Henry. I just love this. So it's just what you all just were talking about, okay? So, you know, in today's Bible study, we've been talking about, you know, the awesome allness of God, okay? And so then Matthew Henry writes, when we look off from Christ, and look at the greatness of
opposing difficulties, we shall begin to fall.
Yeah.
So it's just what people are saying. What are we looking at? Awesome. Allness of God or something else?
Because when we do that, we look at something else, the distractions decrease our faith. And when Jesus got in the boat, that's what he asked, how little their faith was. So we look to God and keep increasing our faith, I feel.
If Peter had kept his focus on the Christ, he would have continued to walk over. But because he looked down at the problem, the waves sunk. It's, again, a life lesson. What are you looking at? An arrow always wants you to think, hey, look at me, look at me, look at your problem, look at it. It's not terrible. You're feeling worse today than you did yesterday. And then you say, shut up. Silly civil thing. Get thee behind me, Satan. And focus on the Father. What is he telling you? He's not telling you that.
Personally, what I've been doing lately, because I don't always know if I'm listening correctly, I go and I do something that I think is for God or for church. I just stop and I go and I do something on the website or a little job, continue a job that I'm working on, and that helps me walk over.
Thank you. Good example of how you're using.
Gilbert Carpenter said that about Mrs. Eddy, that if she wasn't certain about something, she'd take a step, and then that new perspective would help her to see what the right thing to do was. Yes, exactly.
Keep walking. That's one thing to walk over. Don't stop in the middle. keep going.
In the right direction.
In the right direction.
Yeah, hit a moving target.
Yeah, right. Keep going. One step enough for me. If it's just one step, take that step and then another. But don't stop.
And what's the key in all of this? I mean, do you just go blindly storming ahead or?
Ask God.
Well, it's our motive, isn't it? If what we do is out of love, then it can never really be a mistake. It's not exactly what God wants at the moment. If it's done out of love, he will show you. This whole exercise we're talking about, walking over, is not an intellectual exercise.
Telephone number 610-993-8326. Can't take your call right now. Please record your message after the beep. When you have finished recording, simply hang up or press pound.
What was that all about?
Everybody still here?
Yep.
Yeah, we're here.
Right.
Okay.
Well, it is love. Love that motivates, what inspires, designates, and leads the way when you're walking over water. Yes.
Telephone number 610-993-8326. Can't take your call right now. Please record your message after the beep. When you have finished recording, simply hang up or press pound.
Who is that? Linda, that's your phone. So
I just hung up on it.
Oh. Well, yes, love fires, designates, leads the way. When you have love in your heart, you'll be able to walk over. the love of God. Anyone else?
Your message has been recorded.
Oh, well, thank you.
I hope it's a good one. It better be.
Best message I ever heard.
Yeah. Well, that's going to do good.
On that note, thank you, Tom.
Yes. Thank you, Tom.
Thank you.
Very good.
Thank you, Tom.
Thank you.
All right. Have a great day.
You as well. Thank you all. Bye-bye.
Thank you.
Thank you.